The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leibson. It's a busy day in the Leibson household, it sounds like. You've been dealing with the great intellectual and moral issues of our time. Favorite cheeses.
Ha! we're really going to air that?
You've got to air out the cheese, otherwise it gets stinky in here.
No.
What is the favorite cheese? What I got to know. I got here into the studio. You were having an in-depth discussion about favorite cheeses. This is actually a subject I know something about.
I know you do, but is it really for now?
I think most people, my experience in discussing cheese, which is extensive, the Fetching Mrs. Buskirk, an expert artisan cheesemaker, as you know.
There's a famous Supreme
when
Court
you bring up when you bring up cheese to people, it's odd how it's kind of like bringing up bacon. People are very passionate about their cheeses. They are deeply interested in their cheeses. They're deeply interested in other people's cheeses, too.
Okay, fine.
So what is it?
Felix Frankfurter, in a very famous Supreme Court case, once talked about
cheese on a Frankfurter. Is that what you're trying to say?
You can have the right thing in a wrong place. For example, his example was a pig in a parlor. Nothing wrong with a pig. You just, in a parlor, it's in the wrong place. In most households. So I'm just saying this is a perfectly good discussion, maybe not right now.
Well, then we better conclude it.
What is Frankfurter ethics?
What is the favorite?
You're not going to let it go.
It's a simple question.
I'm a fan of the Dutch.
we'll
leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. Okay. All right, Seth. Some more shakeups in the Seth. Some more shakeups. Some more shakeups in the White House.
Yes.
VA secretary, gone.
Good.
Shulkin, gone.
Good.
Obama holdover, gone. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, this is maybe not ideal. Is it fair to say that? But, I mean, look, I guess he did not do what – he was not as billed. Let's put it that way. This is a recurring theme with a lot of these cabinet appointments. I mean, can we just own that at this point? A lot of these cabinet appointments, there have been some very good ones that were a little below the radar. Mike Pompeo has been great. Scott Pruitt at EPA has been fantastic. Some of the ones that you don't hear about, that generally means doing a pretty good job. Betsy DeVos you hear a lot about, but she's actually doing quite a good job over at the Department of Education. You know, it was the only department, Seth, that submitted a budget for this upcoming year that has just passed that is lower than the prior years. Actually, not Washington lower, meaning decreased the rate at which we increased, but actually less dollars. Were you aware of that?
Well, I don't know. It increased 41% for 2019 over where it was in 2018.
Not her request.
That could be. So she would be the first Secretary of Education since Bill Bennett who did that, because
right.
He used to ask for less than what Congress wanted to give him.
I mean, this is what's interesting. The budget that was requested was substantially lower than the budget that was that was approved by Congress.
Yeah.
And this budget bill, Seth, is. I feel like I've beaten the dead horse here, but
it is
the nation's budget after all. We can spend a little time on it.
We should more than what was it given? 17 hours?
Was it that many? Yeah, I mean, it was a very short period.
I don't think it was 24.
No, it was not 24 for sure. No, it was the budget for the nation was done in under a day. No public commentary at all.
Yeah.
If you want to know what's in the budget, you pass it, and then you look at what you're going to have to live with and try and dissect it after the fact. That is no way to run the major world power. That's no way to run, I don't know, a village of 50. Let alone a country of 330 million people. You just can't do it. It's embarrassing. And as I said in that piece I did for the Washington Post yesterday, this is it brings Republicans nothing but shame.
Yeah. absolutely.
You know, the president, Seth, he's in his he has not had a lot to say about the budget since he signed it last Friday, but he has had a few comments, has talked about it a little bit on Twitter. Seems surprised that there was pushback on the budget. It seems surprised that people expected him to have actually invested some political capital in getting his priorities funded in the budget. I like the hard question. It's a one-word question. Why? Why would you be surprised by that?
Well, I think a lot of us were surprised because we thought there was going to be some fight on this. We thought there would be shooting his eye on this. He had taunted earlier in the day last week that he might consider vetoing it. You wrote the key piece on this in the Washington Post, actually. I think that was the best piece I've seen on it. And did you tweet it out, by the way? You should tweet
it. I did,
yeah. Okay, good.
So
anyone who wants to read this piece can go to your Twitter account and get it at the Chris Busker.
We've also it's also linked at American Greatness, right, where there's a little excerpt, and good, you can link back to the full piece at the Washington Post. But you got to wonder why the president has said, he said last year when he signed the spending bill, yep, we're getting the wall. I'm not letting Congress go out of control. We're going to drain the swamp. He said back in February. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. He stared Chuck Schumer in the eye over the shutdown back in February, that not even 2 months ago, Seth.
He won that.
And won it.
Yeah, everyone thinks of it as the Schumer shutdown, right?
It's the Schumer shutdown. He won. Democrats dropped all of their crazy demands about DACA. They wanted not just DACA. They wanted a massive amnesty. They wanted basically a huge immigration giveaway. Trump stood tall, won, and then proceeded to give away the victory. Because he didn't follow up on it, I suppose. I don't know why he was not able to follow up on this. As a supporter of the president and in particular of his agenda, it's very frustrating to see him simply let his own agenda die.
Get hijacked or die on the vine lack of effort, lack of fight. Yeah, it's odd. You know, he gives and he takes, this president. We got some giving that we liked. We liked the appointment of Larry Kudlow. We liked the appointment of John Bolton. Those were two pretty good pieces of news last week. But then he takes, and this budget was a take. There's a comment he made the other day that was just out of nowhere, I thought, having to do with college campuses and free speech. That was a take. Maybe it's a give today with the Department of Veterans Affairs getting new leadership. Could use some, and that'll be a good give. But this is I give you the times, Chris. I give you the times. These are the times we're in now.
Seth, I know you are up to speed on the whole on all things in the VA. Yes, I mean, this is a subject that you care deeply about.
Terribly.
I mean, and it's something that originated here in Arizona. I mean, this is ground zero for the VA scandals at the VA hospitals.
Gotcha.
Shulkin was supposed to be the guy who was sort of above reproach. He was an Obama appointee at a lower level. Mm-hmm. Trump decided to keep him because he thought asserted that he was going to be able to take control of the VA, to reform the VA, to give our veterans the sort of care that they so richly deserve. Mm-hmm. And just doesn't seem to have done much of anything.
Right.
Some tinkering around the edges. I'm better, right? But you got to take the bull by the horns. You need to shake up a really sick system.
Yeah, and it is a big system, too. It's hard to shake up in some respects. But when you keep hearing from veterans after veteran after veteran after veteran, and you keep hearing from congressional people in the Congress who take this stuff seriously, like Andy Biggs, who's been on the case for basically since day one of his job last year ago, and they're not getting responses from the secretary, and they're not getting any real effort, then it's got to change. This is the first job of the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Attention must be paid, if I can quote from the play, Willie Loman. What's the play with Willie Loman?
Death of a Salesman.
Death of a Salesman. Attention must be paid. And it just seems like it has not been. That's a big issue, and it's not hard. It's not hard to pay some attention to this thing. So we'll get a shakeup here. We'll get a change, and that's to the good, I think.
Yeah, so National Security Advisor gone, new one appointed, right?
Economics Advisor,
that was Gary Cohn, gone, new one appointed, Larry Kudlow in.
Secretary of State,
Ray Tillerson, gone. New one, Mike Pompeo in.
New CIA director.
CIA director.
This is also the good.
I'm trying to think who else. Hope Hicks, communications director.
Yeah, there's
gone,
no
but
new.
But
there's no new CD yet. But,
not yet. No,
but that's
so,
okay. You know, I was reading a list of communications directors over the last several administrations.
Yeah.
Maybe 20% of those names were known ever, including to people like me. It's an odd thing. It's not been a highly prolific job.
It's interesting. You know, the other thing,
not the press secretary.
A few people, Corey Lewandowski being the main one, who has kind of pushed the following theory forward, which is that if John Kelly were to leave, and Lewandowski was quick to say, I don't think he's leaving. I don't want him to leave. I think he's doing a great job. He said, but if at some point in the future he were to leave, the president could actually do it without a chief of staff. Kennedy did it and Carter did it, that's a fact I did not know. That's a good Tevi Troy fact, right? I'm Chris Busker. He's Seth Leibson. We can pick up on that on the other side of this break. Yeah, not if you saw the traffic numbers, Seth. You would think would not require any would not require any oversight whatsoever.
We do moving at the speed of business at the White House. We do have a new designate for the Secretariat of Veterans Affairs.
Oh, the Secretariat.
Yes. Nominee for the United States Secretary of Veterans Affairs is Ronnie Lynn Jackson.
RLJ.
Yeah,
love him.
He has been the president's physician, and he's a Navy admiral. And we're looking forward to him taking over the office from Shulkin. That'd be great.
Let me be the first to say that does not sound like a qualification for this position.
Okay.
Right? He's the president's personal physician, and he's an admiral by virtue of being a doctor. I mean, he's got to run one of the larger – he's got to run one of the larger departments in the government that is over, that is tasked with overseeing the health care of all – of veterans. Wouldn't it be good to have somebody who has experience running a major – national enterprise like that?
I don't know.
Especially one that is in deep turmoil and need of turnaround.
I don't know. I mean, I just simply don't know. And the reason I say that is part of this is maybe the personal touch and not the bureaucratic expertise. We have had a lot of success with people who have not been from the traditional cut of the jib to run certain agencies, including the presidency itself. So, you know, maybe this man, this doctor, Dr. Jackson, who has served cheek to jowl with our military in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere, maybe he sees things that traditionally leaders of large bureaucratic organizations do not, and can cut through the nonsense and the common sense from the perspective of the needs of the veterans rather than from the needs of the administration itself. Maybe.
I'll just say I'm from Missouri on this one. Show me.
Okay.
I mean, he does not have the resume of somebody who knows how to turn around a major national hospital chain, which is effectively what the VA is. I hope I am proven wrong. Moving right along. I have been loath to utter two words on this show, Seth. I cannot believe I'm going to. Do you know what they are?
Swiss cheese.
Oh, you want to go? Oh, you want to go back to the cheese conversation?
I just don't know.
I was
Your mind is a cascading flow of ideas. I don't know.
I was emboldened to utter the following words by John Hinderaker and Scott Johnson. The words are Stormy Daniels. You may be familiar. She's an actress.
Whose mind is not a raging torrent flooded with rivulets of thought cascading into a waterfall of creative alternatives.
No, despite her name being Stormy.
Right. Funny enough.
Funny enough, not raging torrent. No, none of those things, despite her name being Stormy. Julie Kelly, our friend, contributor at American Greatness, wrote a devastatingly funny piece at American Greatness, where it was published on American Greatness yesterday, about, well, I'll just, I think that's the title says it all, Never Trump's Creepy Infatuation with Stormy Daniels. I have gotten so much email on this piece. It's insane. All positive. A lot of people saying that basically I owe them a new laptop because they spit their coffee out laughing so hard reading it.
People really do that. I guess they do.
I think it's an expression.
Okay.
Or maybe people are just trying to get
as they come in with bells on?
Yes. People just
you don't see a lot of that. You hear a lot about it.
People are always talking about being there with bells on.
Turns out more of an expression than an act, yeah.
Oh, wasn't I surprised?
Yeah. Where are the bells?
Julie writes this. She says, if Never Trump...
Parts of not this you can't really read. Parts of this you don't want to read. Just send people there, shall we?
She says, Never Trumpers have a juvenile, if not downright creepy, obsession with Stormy Daniels. Her real name is Stephanie Clifford, the adult film, in quotes, actress who claims she had a one-night fling with Donald Trump in 2006. Since news surfaced in January that Trump's lawyer allegedly paid Daniels $130,000 in hush money to keep their sexual encounter a secret, voyeuristic Never Trumpers such as Jonah Goldberg and Bill Kristol have been fixated on her. If I were Mrs. Never Trump, I might want to look at the history at the history on their computer browsers. I'm paraphrasing there.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I understand these nerds didn't get to hook up with the homecoming queen in high school, but sheesh, give it a rest already. That's the central point, right? It is a purely prurient interest on behalf of some of these people. If you look at their Twitter feeds, if you look at the things that certain people are writing at the Corner, at National Review, guys, let me guess, you've been doing a lot of research on Stormy Daniels for your writing project, right? It is a little odd, is it not?
It's a little odd.
If her name was Lisa Smith and she was a secretary from Tupelo, maybe not quite as much interest or online research going into it.
Yeah, Tucson, Tucumcari, Tehachapi, Tonopah, any of those places.
All the great T cities.
All the great T cities. Yeah, well, it is as much them as it is CBS, and I think that's the point I would make, is why are so many in the conservative movement falling for the narrative that CBS, 60 Minutes, and Anderson Cooper think is the most crucial? It's really very odd when you go to CNN and you're used to seeing four stories on Russia and you see four stories on this nobody. And, you know, it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me at all that they would credit and give credibility to this thing. I mean, why is someone who in writing twice or possibly thrice, but at least twice denied this account, why is all of a sudden the third or fourth time, depending on how many times you count this thing, why is the third or fourth time is it true? I don't know. It's going to be a bit of a morass. It'll be a bit of a legal morass, but I have no idea why conservatives are giving the same credibility to this story that CBS is. None. It makes no sense to me.
Here's the thing about, well, we do know why, right? Because
because it's not Tehachapi and Tonopah. That's Julie Kelly's point in part.
Yeah, it is in part. I mean, look, they want any, you know, it's the any weapon to hand ethics in order to bash Trump, to beat Trump with something new today, because we found that the Mueller investigation is going nowhere. So that's kind of running out of steam. So what do we have today? Oh, and by the way, it's a woman who takes her clothes off on the internet. I better look into that. I mean, it's a little embarrassing. I mean, these are guys in their 40s, 50s, 60s.
Who has propelled this story into a line of income, by the way. Making American Something Again is her new show, right? I mean, she is profiting off this, right?
Seth, let me ask the question that nobody is asking. Who's paying her lawyer? Who's paying her lawyer?
That is a question no one has asked.
No one has asked. He's not doing it for free.
No, that's a good
point.
He's
spending a lot of time on it. In fact, I would venture to say it is occupying or has recently occupied all of his time. Who's paying him? Who's paying her as she flies around the country?
No, that question has not been asked. That would have been a good question for Anderson to ask.
Probably not that interested in that question. My money is on Tom Steyer.
Okay.
Right? I mean, maybe it's him, maybe it's not. But, right, that is a possible. Somebody is paying the bills.
We did find this out.
Daniels.
We tend to find these things out over time, right?
If people want to know and people do want to know these things, we may not know it We won't know it next week, probably, but we'll know it in 6 months, or we'll know it in a year or two after it's relevant.
More will be revealed, so to speak.
Well, I cannot top that, so I'm just going to leave it there. I'm Chris. He's Seth. We'll be right back. I'm Chris Buskirk. He's Seth Leaps, and John Dombrowski is right back where he belongs, which is on the show. John, how are you?
In the hot seat?
In the hot seat. You said it. I didn't.
Hey, what's cooking?
We got a little good news today on the economy, right? GDP was revised up.
Yeah, that's right. From the fourth quarter of 2017, which was reported at 2.5%, Growth expected was 2.7. It came in at 2.5. But now after looking back, which we always do, we always continue to analyze the data, but we find that actually we were at 2.9% GDP for fourth quarter of 2017. So fantastic. Obviously, again, meeting expectations, above expectations actually. And on top of that, also consumer spending up again, which is good. You know, when I look at consumer confidence, even though we see the markets, what's happening in the markets right now, we can talk about that too as well, Chris. But consumer confidence definitely is you can sense and feel, and when you talk to people, things are much better. People feel better about themselves. They feel better about their jobs. They feel better about spending money, as we can see the numbers are proving out. And this is obviously good for the economy. Now, one thing that we usually always look for is overconfidence, right?
Yeah.
So if
things getting carried a little too far.
If things start to get a little bit too, you know, the needles pushed too far, then we can expect that there would usually be some type of a pullback somewhere. However, I think we're just in the beginning of this because we still don't see the benefits of tax reform yet.
Yeah, right. People are getting more money in their paychecks, right. But it takes time for that to kind of work its way through the entire economy. People have to kind of get used to it, figure out what they're going to do with it. But so, you know, so far so good, right?
Yeah, and one other thing, you and I have talked about this in the past, where you could put money into your IRAs
before
the end of the year. There's still time to do that for 2017. We've talked about that a lot, and what I wanted to touch on today, if it's okay with you, we haven't really talked about this, but is distributions from those IRAs. So there's mandatory distribution for individuals out there that hit the age of 70 and a half, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have not taken that distribution for 2017 and they were supposed to, there's a pretty stiff penalty for not taking the distribution. And that penalty is 50% of whatever that was supposed to be. So as an example, if you had a $3,000 required amount that you were supposed to pull out of that IRA and you did not in 2017, well, that's a 50% penalty. So $1,500 of that will be a penalty.
That's basically a tax, right? You just pay that to the government as
a
fine,
tax,
sort of.
And plus, you have to claim all $3,000 as income and pay taxes on the $3,000.
Hold on. You pay the taxes on the $3,000 and you pay the 50% penalty?
Yes. So that 50% penalty is above whatever your normal income tax rate would be. So it is important for folks to be monitoring what they need to be doing with their retirement accounts, just as if you're thinking of pulling money out of the retirement account before the age of 59 and a half, you will have a early withdrawal penalty of 10%. So, and have to claim that withdrawal as income and pay taxes on it as well. So there's a variety of features and facts that you have to be concerned about when it comes to your retirement accounts, when and if you need to be pulling money out of and where you need to be pulling money out of so that you're not penalized. Left you speechless on that.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's right.
Sorry, I started coughing.
Gosh.
Yeah. So
you took my breath
about.
Away, John.
Yes. A lot to think about when it comes to retirement.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that you can still do your 2017 IRA. That just, I don't know, when you told me that a few months ago, I was like, what? You got to be kidding me.
And for self-employed individuals, you know, if you have participating to some type of a self-employment pension plan, a SEP IRA you may have heard of, or some other types of retirement plans, you may still be able to put in a substantial amount of money for 2017, as well as pushing that off all the way off into, I think it's September of 2018, still making contributions. You need to talk to your tax advisors about that. Make sure you have everything properly set up. You've got to file that tax return still, but leave it open to where you'll be able to amend that tax return and file for those extensions, which will allow you to, you know, have a little extra time to make these cash flow decisions as need be.
John, is it? I don't know if you've seen this with people already or not, but as they have a lighter tax burden, you know, they've got more take home pay. Does that mean people maybe who weren't able to financially able to make a contribution, maybe now they can, or if they were, they can make a bigger one?
Well, it's possible, but I'd say this is that if you have a lighter tax burden because of you made less income, well, then, of course, not. You wouldn't have the income.
No, I meant because taxes
tax
are lower.
Refund.
Yeah.
That's true. Then, yes, they might be able to take that additional money they were paying in taxes and push that into the 401k. If they need help with that, please call me, 480-991-1055, or go to our website, Grand Canyon Planning. Rupert.com. All right. Is this Peter? Who is this? Rupert something Holmes?
You worked your way into it. Nicely done, John. Rupert Holmes.
Yeah. All right. Very good. All right. Security and Advisory Services.
Your work is done.
Offered through Climate One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor. Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC and Climate One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Hey, guys, not on tomorrow. I'll talk to you next week.
Have a great
Thanks, John.
Have
a great
Easter.
For us. You bet.
Have a great Easter and prayers with you.
All right, I want to do something a little bit off the beaten path, at least for us today. There's a report out today. I don't know if you've seen this. You probably have not, Seth. The FBI is investigating a dollar for anybody who can say how I'm going to fill in that blank. It has nothing to do with politics. The FBI is investigating how the major shoe companies have been financing youth sports. Hmm. To me, this is endlessly fascinating, in part because I have kids involved in youth sports and have seen this. But you see these kids who are highly talented youth athletes, under 18, starting at maybe 10, 11, 12 years old. Parents go from having no money and all of a sudden have a Mercedes and a lot of gold based on the amateur performance of a 13-year-old. Interesting. No, well, the FBI is investigating this, and it actually has an Arizona twist to it. It being reported here today at in USA Today, report, Bagley family received direct benefits from Nike sponsorship of an AAU club basketball team. The ongoing investigation into finances surrounding amateur basketball have cast an ongoing shadow over some of college basketball's most talented young players. Chief among them is Marvin Bagley III, Duke's uber-talented freshman, who is sure to be a top-five pick in the forthcoming NBA draft. By the way, he's just turned 18. He reclassified up, right? So he should still be a senior in high school. He reclassified up to go to Duke for this year so that he could be one of these sort of one-and-done senior college players. He'll be in the draft this year and is not just a top five prospect, he's a top one prospect. It says here, while Bagley and Duke escaped any punitive measures during the FBI's initial investigation into youth basketball finances, that doesn't mean it will remain so in the future. In fact, according to an investigation by the Oregonian and OregonLive.com, the Bagley family may have been one of the more notable beneficiaries of direct sneaker company aid. In the youth basketball scene. For the Bagleys, it appears the path out of financial straits was paved by the Nike Elite Youth Basketball League squad called Phoenix Family, a group organized and coached by Marvin Bagley Jr., Marvin Bagley III's father. Shortly after taking the reins of Phoenix Family, the Bagley family relocated from a working-class Phoenix suburb to ritzy Southern California and a neighborhood where average houses sell for $1 million and more. The story goes on from here. Basically, what's happening is that the shoe companies, Adidas, Under Armour, Nike, are funneling huge amounts of money into youth sports, and which fine in and of itself, but that they're working around NCAA rules in order to basically give bags of money to parents of talented prospects. And again, it starts at a very young age. I may go in a direction you're not possibly expecting, but so I kind of come down on this, which is to say, so what? A lot of this is a problem that's created by the NCAA by trying to maintain the fiction that these athletes are in quotes amateurs, which really is just a way of them trying to maintain their own monopoly on a particular aspect of sports. Just let everybody get paid, and then you don't have this problem in the first place. But that deprives the NCAA of its monopoly status. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I don't like these monopolies either. But read me the thing about Bagley. The thing that caught my eye and ear was the part you were reading about. What was this one and done thing? This one step up business. Go do that one again.
So that's not in the story. But I was just saying as kind of an aside. So Marvin Bagley III. This is the young man who is currently playing. He's a freshman at Duke.
Right.
Just finished his freshman season at Duke and. I think Duke got to that, I don't know, the grade eight or something in the tournament. He will go into the draft now.
Right.
Okay. Bagley should be a senior in high school right now. He reclassified up a year,
right,
which you're allowed to do. You can go up or down. There are rules about this, but you could go up, I think, as much as 2 years and down as much as 2 years based on certain things in the calendar, right?
Okay.
People, you've heard probably of people holding their kids back, wanting them to be a little older so they'd look better athletically against their competition if they were in the year below them. He did it the opposite. He wanted to get into the NBA sooner rather than later. So he reclassified when he was still 17 to go up a year, skipped his senior year of high school, and went straight to Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, the story makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, just meant
the sentences make sense. Yeah. Yes. But I'm going to gather that his ability to get into Duke a year early had very little to do with his academic credential.
Well, he's an academic admission. He's an academic scholarship.
He is on an academic scholarship.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And I have no comments on this story whatsoever. Great.
Okay. The question here is this. Why do we allow the NCAA to maintain the fiction that they're doing anything other than basically robbing college athletes of what ought to be theirs in the form of earnings? You don't know. Nobody seems to know. So why do we continue doing it? Remember when the Northwestern football team, what was it, maybe 2-3 years ago, when they formed a union and went on strike trying to force the NCAA to pay them? No?
These are not areas I've spent any time in. I honestly just don't. I'm going to let you run with it. It's your world, Chris. Enjoy it.
Well, Seth, despite your opinion to the contrary, I do think that these people should be allowed to be paid. And it makes no sense to me that the FBI is getting involved in this investigation. This whole thing is something that has been created simply as a way to maintain the NCAA monopoly. This is a frustration. I know this is not the place that a lot of people talk about. It's talked about a lot on sports radio, but why are they talk about something that has actually major social and political implications there. People need to be paying attention to this. This is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's also something that goes to an important principle, which is that families ought to be allowed to make these decisions for themselves without the exogenous factor of an NCAA wanting to make money off of a kid's star power. And then to get the FBI involved in this in this investigation, it really seems like government overreach. Okay, enough on that. I know you want me to go on. I won't. I'm Chris Busker. Keith Seth Leibson. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I know we're reporting this story in our news segment. Corey's doing it. The Daily Beast, I think, is the one who broke it. It says a heartbroken, and this is their word, Ann Coulter says that Donald Trump is a shallow, lazy ignoramus. Daily Beast reports it this way. Right-wing firebrand Ann Coulter, whose 2016 campaign book, In Trump We Trust, touted the many virtues of the Republican nominee, is she's having second, third, and possibly even fourth thoughts about Donald Trump. This is what the Daily Beast says. Quote, I knew he was a shallow, lazy ignoramus, and I didn't care, close quote. Coulter admitted to an audience largely composed of college Republicans and a few hecklers at Columbia University on Tuesday night. It was a sort of anti-Trump invective that Coulter would share privately with pals, including this reporter, over a wine-soaked dinner during the first year of the new administration. But in recent weeks, she has increasingly voiced her displeasure in public forums. This time, Coulter, wearing her trademark slinky black cocktail dress, accessorized by a sparkling handcuff-sized bracelet, repeatedly trashed her former hero during a supposed debate in Columbia's Rune Arledge Cinema with her good friend neoliberal blogger Mickey Kaus. Seth, is there a point here?
The point is to take Anne with a dose of skepticism from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
She has a record that has some checkers on it. Remember, she was the one who was promoting Mitt Romney as the best nominee the Republican Party could put forward in 2012,
mm-hmm.
and came to then start suggesting that Mitt Romney would be the ideal vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump at one point.
Right.
So, you know, she used to do some wonderful legal work when she was working for the Center for Constitutional Rights, and she is a very skilled lawyer. Some of her politics can be mercurial at best.
Yeah, I don't look. I am a.
In Trump We Trust, it's pretty strong language to go from comparing Trump to God to this. Feels like you might be taking your audience for a bit of a ride.
Yeah, right. I mean, shallow, lazy, ignoramus, lazy. Has anyone who criticizes Trump, even his detractors, do they really say lazy?
Yeah.
The man rarely sleeps. Everybody, no, you just don't hear lazy.
You don't hear lazy. you hear hard to keep up with.
Hard to keep up with, energetic.
Yeah.
Now, you want to criticize on policy? Okay, I'm open to that. You want to say that he didn't, I mean, this is my criticism. You want to say he did not advocate for his own agenda on the budget? That's a real criticism. Shallow, lazy, ignoramus. Yeah, it's the stock and trade of a provocateur, which I'm not sure is entirely helpful in trying to push the agenda that really matters to this country. It'd be interesting to have Ann on and see how she would respond if she actually got some pushback on some of those points. Anyway, we got to go to a break. I'm Chris. He's Seth. This is the Seth and Chris Show.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.